This meeting is now being recorded.
So this gift of the water of the bread of life, what? This is a gift of God in man, who gives you free. All gifts of God are free. And this is also a gift from Master, the God in him, to the disciple, which has the power to enliven the life in him. Guru Nanak defines who is dead man and who is really alive. And he says, only he is alive, O Nanak, in which God has become the enlivening power of the soul. The soul that has become the mouthpiece of God, are the switch which is connected with the powerhouse, that electricity of the powerhouse is working through him, is in tune, in contact with them. So unless we have that contact by the receptivity, we cannot bear forth much fruit. You can remain a religious man. You can have all scriptures by heart. You can have all the world literature stuffed in your brains. Well, just like so many libraries are there. Maybe they all give reference to this thing. But this thing you can have only by living up to what the Master says, the first thing, and the second is by developing receptivity. His words should abide in you, that's the first thing, and you should abide in him. Only then you will have this gift of bread of life and the water of life. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered. That is, he is dead. You see, the same words, Guru Nanak says the same word he is saying. When a branch is cut off from the tree, naturally that withers and dries up and used for firewood. And men gather them and cast them into the fire and they are burned. This is what is meant in the biblical literature. The soul dies. Actually, it doesn't die, but it becomes withered, you see. That is cut off from the Lord, from the God in him. If he abides in me again, he says, if he abides in me and my words abide in you, you shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done. Ask anything you want. In all things, see, you ask and shall be given unto you. You knock and shall be opened unto you. Only then, when you come in contact with you. First of all, there will be no desire left. Oh, Mr. tell us, what is that by knowing which? Nothing more is left to be known. He says, then, first of all, you never have any desire whatsoever. If at all any does strike you, they arise in you, that will fulfill the desire. Herein is my Father glorified, and ye bear much fruit, so shall ye be my disciples. Such like disciples can have the water of life and the bread of life. As the Father now, he goes further. How to develop this receptivity? Then he says, as the Father has loved me, so have I love you, continue be in my love. In love only, you see, you remember somebody. What is love? For whom you have got love, he is constantly in your heart. Always. You may not be expressing his words, but you are something dragging you from within. That constant remembrance is there. And with the heart in which such a state, I mean, develops, how can in that heart, other than him whom he loves, abide there? If at all anybody is remembered only for the sake of whom he loves, you see. So if we love God, we love the others for the sake that God is in him, not for the love of forgetting him and loving something else. So he says, if ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love. How to abide in his love, you see? Well, keep up the commandments you are given. What does he say? He says, don't think evil of others. Even in mind, word and deed, you must be truthful. Never tell lies, never conceal, don't use up others' rights. Don't say sarcasms. Have something else in your mind and something else in your mouth. You say something now, and behind you say something else. Be true to your own self. You can deceive others, but not the God in you. So what I always impress is to be true to one's own self. So this is what requires, so love requires, you see. Then what are his commandments? Be chaste in word, thought, and deeds. Live up to what the scriptures say. Scripture, those who are married, scriptures say, marriage means taking up a companion in life to be with you in weal or woe. And both help each other to know God, for that's the highest aim of a man's life. Getting children might be one duty, not 100% duty. And about it says, ye love thy wife as Christ loved the church. So he wants all of us to keep up to his commandments. And what he says, love God with all my heart, with all my strength, with all my mind, and love thy neighbor. Other masters say, God, love thy God and love all creation. There is no place where God is not. So love is the thing through which you can have the sweet remembrance and the constant remembrance. You dream of it, you see. And when you go into very fast sleep, you reverberate without knowing the same thing will be coming out of your mouth. He says, if ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, that will give you more love from day to day. Even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. He says, follow me. I will live up to the commandments of my Father. And similarly, you love, abide by the commandments of the God in me, of the Father in me. So these are the things, have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and your joy might be full. This is how you have pleasure of the Master. When you just live, take the example of there are so many sons. The man has got 3-4 sons. one man just lives according to the commandments of the Father, never disobeys. He simply follows what his intentions are. Others obey only when they are told. Are you that willingly, not willingly? The son also do not obey. Which son will be the best of all? Those who read the intentions of the Father and without saying, without any inclination given, he lives up to that. After every son knows what his father wants. Every disciple knows what his master wants. Should he repeat every time, every day, that very lesson? Wise man is one who hears the word of the master and keeps in his heart of hearts and lives up to it. If you do that, you will win the pleasure of the master. And what will master do? When father excuses me, leaves the body, what does he do? He gives the keys of the whole thing to the son who is obedient, who lives up to his commandments. So this is what Guru Nanak says, for the purpose of having the water of life, or the bread of life for which you have come into this world, is in the hands of the master. Go to him, remain where you are, never mind, by living a religious way of living, that would prepare the ground, you see, when you surrender your whole self to the master. That is why Christ and all of the mother say, master say, leave all and follow me. What does he mean, you see? By following him means not to leave homes and everybody should leave and follow him, you see. Excuse me, where he will give them accommodation to live. To follow means to surrender their will, you see, according to his wishes, not as a slave mind that, but as a friend. You find this thing further, I just open it. This is my commandment, that ye have one, love one another as I have loved you. And further what he says, greater love hath no man than this, that a man may lay down his life for his friends. Love knows service and sacrifice. Ye are my friends. If you do whatsoever I command you, you see, henceforth I call you not servants, for the servants knoweth not what his Lord doth, but I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known to you. So whenever masters come, they don't want to make a slave of you, they address you as friends, so that you may know what he says. A friend can know a friend better. A slave cannot know a friend. So whenever masters come, they do not make a slave of you, but they give you equal rights. They say, I am a man like you. Here are my words. Abide with them. You abide in them, you abide in me. So this is how this activity is developed, by living up to what the masters say, and also by developing receptivity and abiding in the master. He takes you as equal, as friends. So for that what is required? So you have known what is meant by the water of life or the bread of life. How can you partake of it? Only by developing receptivity. As you think, so you become. When his word made flesh, then word will come in you. You read that word is in, you see, not the flesh of the body. So these are some things which are given in the form of parables to make you understand what is what. And for that thing is required, you see, the pure lives. Unless you live up to what he says, unless you abide by the words what he utters, if you live up to them, hard to have. First step. Then the second step you can have only when you learn to abide in Him. So for that, what is required now? You saw the whole curtain is the mind between us and God. Soul is of the same nature as that of God, but soul is under the control of mind. And mind is at the leverage to the organ faculties, to the outside things, and we are given up to the pleasures of the outside. So unless mind is stilled, you cannot have this bread of life. You find in the scriptures, they say, be still, physically and in mind and intellectually. If you do that, and know that He is God, you find that's the curtain between me, between us and the God. One saint says, if you have a mind to know God, you have made a resolute will to know God, then just put one step on your mind, that is still it, and the next step that you will take, that will enter the house of your Father. So mind is the, what the curtains are the impediment lying between man and God. Now how to withdraw mind from outside? Every time outside things, the outgoing faculties, eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. These are five organs of sense through which five senses work. Sight, audition, smell, taste and touch. Always we get impressions from outside. The subconscious reservoir of our mind is overflowing with the impressions we receive from outside. We see dreams of that very thing. We reverberate unknowingly those very things which are overflowing within us. So how to withdraw mind from the outgoing faculties? If you know that is only by stilling it. And to still the mind there are ways and ways and many ways. We have been seeking so far God in outside things. Kingdom of God cannot be had by observation. It is within you. So long as you are engaged with the pursuits which relate to the outgoing faculties, you cannot find it. It is only by liberating the soul and analyzing the soul from mind and withdrawing mind from the outgoing faculties that you can know who you are, what you are. You can come in contact with that. This elixir of life, or the water of life, is already within us, and the retarding factor is only mind. If mind just is directed to the outgoing faculties, we become worldly. If mind is directed to the soul above, we become spiritual. So this is what we have to learn in the on the way to God. God is the very soul of our souls. God is the very power that is controlling us in the body. If you have mind, you will find that one thing I tell you, in the natural way. If you are sitting in a absorbed state, your attention is just absorbed in something, your outgoing faculties do not work. Because the attention, which is the expression of the soul in the body, is engaged in something, engrossed, absorbed. these faculties have strength from the attention when they are that is attached with the senses. And similarly, mind also has strength from the soul. When you are absorbed, even you will find your mind doesn't work. You go into your reverie. So mind is the only thing standing in our way back to God. The Master says, "O mind, be still." You would like to have a draught of the water of life. That you would have, whatever water that water of life, as I told you, God is light. And God is sound principle. That you come in contact when you are still mentally and physically. So that is the thing. It is already within us. Like the parasitical plant, it is covered on a certain part of the tree. That portion on which it is spread, that becomes dry. That parasitical plant derives all the life from the branches of the tree on which it is spread. Similarly, mind takes strength from the soul and has that soul covered up. We are not able to see God. So Master tells us what to do. Just control your mind. Then he says, what to help you on the way? He says, just leave out all infirmities. All whatever shortcomings you have got in the way of violence, hatred, and lies, and other passions. If you do that, do what are good. There are five things. There's hatred. Why have what you have? Love. If you have got anger, have what you have? Forgiveness. If you are impure, lusty, have the what you have? Chastity. So these are the things you adopt, those good things, and leave off these things. Zoroaster was asked by people what should they do. He said, join the army of God. And he was asked, what is the qualification required? And he said, righteousness. And he asked, what is righteousness? And he defined good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. So ethical life is the stepping stone to spirituality. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. We live after the virtues and leave all vices. That will help us to just control your mind for a while. And whatever wrong you have done, repent. Wash away with the tears of your eyes of repentance. This is the way prescribed by all masters who came in the past, and we should live up to them. So, generally you will find we have got full of passions, greed. What else? You will find lies, deceptions, usurping other rights. Well, not just thoughts. Thinking evil of others. All the time, all these things go within this cabin of the man body, with all filth, with all dirt. How can you expect this king to enter a place, a cabin, which is full of dirt and filth? So that is why all masters say, what you do, you hearts. Well, if you get your bodies clean, you wash it from outside, when all that cleanliness is next to godliness, if within you lies all the filth and the bad odor, we should also cleanse the body within too. So this is what all masters say. They say, Kavi says, if a fish, even if that enters the most sacred river, Ganges, even that by living in that water, that cannot leave off bad odor. So it is not the cleanliness of the body outside, but cleanliness of the heart within. And that is the way that I now lay before you to get this inner way, you see. That, you see, bodily we have just, used and toilet for us millions of dollars every year. But that's not the outer purity that draw the attention of God, but the inner one. He is after finding out any holy place, any heart full of love, full of his thought. But our hearts are full with worldly thoughts. We're thinking evil of others by usurping others' rights, squeezing others' blood, by lusty thoughts, hatred, and so on. So we must keep our hearts pure. So for that reason, what have you to do now? That is what I just read out from Bible. You should become Gurumukh. Gurumukh word means to be always keeping your master before you. When he initiates you, gives a little experience of the water of life and the bread of life, the very moment he resides with you and never leaves you, that is the Christ power in him. The God power and the Guru power, which never dies. He never leaves you. I said, I shall never leave you till the end of the world. And all masters say, it is the God in him, in that the Son of Man. That is the true master, that when that takes care of somebody, well, never leaves him until he takes him to the feet of the Father. So he says, for that what you should do, you just come in contact with God and be always directed like the needle of the compass towards north, always thinking of the grace of the Master. As you think, so you become. As I told you, what is the Master? It is the God in him manifest. That is the Master. And we have regard for that human pole at which that power was. But all the same, you will find all masters differentiating these things, the Son of Man and the Christ. So, what to do then? When you live up to him, what he says, live up to him. And you will find the truth which is clothed in light, the truth which is the symphonies of the music of all harmonies, which is the outer aspect of the God in action power, which is called world, and world was made flesh and bread. This is the way, whether you live in one region or the other, that makes no difference. Remain. Man is social. He must remain in some social body. But while remaining in social body, you will make their good actions. You will have reactions of the good. But to know God, to have the water of life and the bread of life, which will quench your thirst forever and appease your hunger forever, that is coming in contact with the God power, with the light and sound principle, which you have at the, as a gift from the Master. And we must live up to what is. This is today's something, I think that will do. This is Yuga. The masters never come to break one religion and start new. The truth is already there. Just live up to them. If you live up to them, everything is all right. What is the music of life gives us, and what, I say, this light, etc., we can see or not, can we come in contact with that? What do we need? And how can we have contact with that? That will form the subject of tomorrow's talks. Thank you.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was the last half of a talk from December 13, 1963, in Harmony Grove, California, entitled Readings from St. John. Our reader this morning is Tanya Franklin. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, and good morning for the wonderful satsang of our precious master, and the invocation to our precious, adorable Lord and Savior, Sant Kirpal Singh Ji Maharaj. In one voice, we sing our praises of gratitude for your everlasting love and divine guidance as we send our heartfelt prayers to you. For the reading today, the Master's talk is Right Understanding Exalted, a talk published June 1972 issue of Sat Sandesh, beginning on page 5. The soul is a conscious entity. God has given a physical form to each one, the outer and inner construction of which is the same in all. Even the appearance is the same. The same sicknesses attack the physical form. Furthermore, each soul is under the influence of the mind and the senses, which in turn drag it outward toward the worldly enjoyments. So he who separates the soul from mind, and mind from senses, and senses from enjoyments, gets the right understanding in truth. He is a devotee of the one Creator. And by sitting beside such an enlightened devotee of God, one can also gain this right understanding. For lack of it, man remains trapped in the world. All men in all religions are subject to this imprisonment, and if you want to release yourself from this depressing condition, then when senses are immobile, the mind at rest, and the intellect is stilled, then the soul perceives. You can see that even the cure for man's misery is one and the same for all. Go to one who has stilled his mind and senses. If you go to an intellectually learned person, you will hear a very fine discourse with perhaps 5 or 10 different meanings to one point through inference, but he will not have seen what he is speaking of. And what is more important, he cannot show it to you. Swamiji Maharaj says, if you desire release from the world, listen to the true master's instructions. When I spoke of these things in the West, they asked me, you have described the truth in very simple and clear words. Why has it been so difficult to understand up to now? I explain that those who describe the truth for them had themselves no experience of it and could merely express some ideas at the intellectual level. In this context, truth has been described so often as in so many different ways that whatever was known of it originally has been forgotten. No wonder it is now difficult for people to understand all these different theories. Those who had no first-hand knowledge were just beating around the bush. A person with even a little discernment will see the difference between the words of a master and those of an ordinary man. The Gurbani describes this as the undeveloped words of worldly people and the developed words of the spiritually enlightened. The words that come from the spiritually enlightened come directly from some higher power. Actually, all speech is sustained, but there are two types of sound, one being hidden and the other apparent. The hidden sound sustains everything. Since when? This sound started beyond the four yugas. It vibrated the truth. The sound, which becomes apparent, is sustained by pranas. The vital airs are energy. But the hidden sound is not sustained by anything. We are all worshippers of the latter. What should one do to gain right understanding? Enjoy satsang, the company of one who has become the image of truth itself. Satsang is not the company of intellectuals, lecturers, hypocrites, propagandists, or paid preachers. All masters advise that to solve the mystery of life, one should first develop right understanding, to understand in reality that we are soul in the body, embodied soul, no matter whether we are Hindu, Muslim, Christian, or any other religion. Recognize all men's castes as one. There is no difference between he who lives in the city and he who lives in the jungle, for all men are truly embodied souls, and all are sustained by the same power. That which controls the soul in the body. Just consider that there are 9 physical orifices, yet the soul cannot run out through any of them. Only when the sustainer or controller withdraws does the soul also leave the body. The breath leaves the body. It could remain outside, but there is something controlling that, something drawing it back. This is the mystery of life, solving which you will gain right understanding. Without right understanding, nothing worthwhile is achieved. But with right understanding, you will have right thoughts, and right thoughts will give you right speech and right actions. From then on, love for all mankind develops automatically. There will be no question of fighting with others over petty differences. You will express what you have seen and not what has been inferred. It is a great blessing to have been given a human life. And the aim of the human life is to solve the mystery of it. If you cannot still the mind, intellect, and senses, then keep the company of he who can do this. Where the Satguru is, there is the company of the truth. Satsang is not where we hear stories about the past and the future for the sake of earning someone's livelihood, where even the scriptures are explained in 1,000 different lights of understanding. Right understanding cannot be developed like this. Excuse me, but the volume of preaching is at a peak in this age. I do not think it has ever been so rife before. And the result of it all is hatred for one another. The steps we were taking were misdirected, and still we are doing it today. So what is the remedy? As we have said, to sit beside someone who has the right understanding. We will now take Guru Nanak Sahib's hymn. When you meet a true guru, you get the jeweled right knowledge. Sadhguru is the image of truth, who has become the true knowledge and who sees that the Lord is the doer of all things and is working in all creation. Know a Sadhguru to be one who brings everyone together. This does not mean a guru of any particular sect, but a guru of the world, of all mankind. Such a guru does not see your religion, but rather he sees you, that you are soul in the physical form. He has freed himself from all shackles and can free others also. The question of how the senses can be withdrawn from outer attractions, how the mind can be free from the senses, how the soul can be analyzed from the mind, all are part of a physical science, a practical science, of which the Sadhguru is a competent expert who can give the scientific experience to the aspirant, who in turn, with the guidance and instruction of the Sadhguru, learns to increase that experience daily through regular practice. With such a method, the disciple can become an expert as the guru. There is a great difference between a master and a philosopher's stone. The latter makes gold from iron, but the former makes us like himself. A philosopher's stone cannot make another philosopher's stone, but the master can make souls realized. This is why all masters stress that reading, writing, and thinking are something apart from spirituality. Reasoning is the help and reasoning the bar. If you go on poring over books and drawing inferences intellectually, you will be at least be taking the first steps with the help of the words of the masters found in the Holy Scriptures. But all this cannot be of any use in a practical science of withdrawing the senses from sense objects and releasing the mind. For this, some higher bliss must be enjoyed, which up to now the mind has never had the opportunity to taste. It is all a practical matter. And he who has realized the subject practically can give the secret knowledge of it. One must seek his company. When I was searching the truth, I can tell you that my search was intense. I would start to read a certain book in the night and without ceasing would study the whole night through only to rise in the morning and yet no way out was discovered. The books held very good thoughts, like green orchards, very refreshing. The heart starts to desire these things mentioned therein. But how? The books say, God is ever exist, that God is ever existent. No place is without him. He is ever apparent. But how to see him? This is the burning question. Is it not? I can only repeat that it is a practical subject. In this regard, Bulish Shah says, why read this pile of books, burdening your head with all these thoughts? Leave the words, leave all calculations, drive away these ascetic ways. Is it not true that one becomes more confused by excessive reading, tiring the brain endlessly? Bookish knowledge is all wilderness. There is no way out. The love of one should dwell in your heart. That is all. Is it not the purpose behind reading scriptures? To love the Lord. Tulsi Sahib says, reading and reading, the whole world died. No one became a teacher. If you dwell on the word love and develop that in yourself, you will become a real pandit, a teacher. The purpose of reading is to become a devotee of the Lord and to love all things as the Lord is in each one. People do not do this. Instead, they become lecturers, etc. But they do not develop love in themselves. All the world's conflicts are due to lack of love. And all conflict is due to those who do not realize the truth, but choose to become powerful through learning. And they are responsible for the discord and strife from which mankind is suffering. Had they realized the truth, they would have spoken it out. But they said, no, only our religion is the right one. In this way, they drove one religion against another. They built controversial conditions. And then they sat down and watched while men shed their blood for these useless causes. We have a clear example in the partition of India and Pakistan, which came about through such-like conditions, and those who created them sat aside while approximately 1,500,000 persons were butchered needlessly. If they had had even a little right understanding, this tragedy would never have happened. Some years ago, during Hazur's lifetime, there had been some trouble in Multan, now in Pakistan, between some Hindus and Muslims. Baba Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj went there and held a satsang, a hearing which the people said, if only you had come earlier, this trouble would not have arisen. Masters come to the world to join the brothers and sisters together, not to break them apart. And they come to rejoin the souls back to the Lord. This is the work of the masters. They say love. In love, there is oneness, union, not aloofness. Nam is the sustainer of Khand and Brahmand. To realize this Nam is the right understanding. The only true thing, the only pure thing, is the Nam. Tulsi Sahib says, they chant the four Vedas, 18 Puranas, 9 Vikanaras, and 6 Sastras, but lose the truth given out in them. Such is the case with followers of all religions. They go on reading their holy scriptures parrot-like and do not follow the meanings underlying them. Not only was the truth lost by reading all these, but he also says, without knowing the Surat Shabd, one is like the Chandul bird and can imitate all words without the underlying meaning. While the attention or the soul does not meet God, the Oversoul, and surrounded by mind and senses, remains a prisoner because it has not been analyzed from them, then what is the true value of book learning? Tulsi Sahib likens this to a Chandur bird, which copies any sound it hears. It does not mean that one should never write or think, but alone they have no value. The true aim behind reading the scriptures is one fully understands what one reads, is to gain the realization. Since the world began, Jiva did not leave the books, did not get true happiness. What a clear statement. We just cannot let go of the holy books and scriptures. Of course, outer knowledge is like a garland of flowers adorning a realized person who will then explain the path of truth in many ways and thereby help the different types of seekers to understand. But a realized soul is a realized soul, with or without the worldly degrees. And whatever he says is pregnant with meaning, overflowing with love and truth. Sikh Saidi says that if a learned man is unrealized, then reading and writing is like a donkey's burden upon his head. On this very subject, Guru Amar Das Ji says that it is like making a sweet dish without any sugar. Stirring it with a spoon from morn till night, will it give any sweet taste? So Guru Nanak is explaining the importance of right understanding. When you meet a true Satguru, you get the jeweled right knowledge. Giving your mind to your guru, you get the imperishable love. Right understanding will only come when the soul transcends the mind. Just think about it carefully. You are on the mind's level and as yet have not solved the mystery. If you remain at that level, how will you get full understanding? When Swami Dayanand went to the guru, he had his books under his arm, and the guru said, "Dayanand, first throw away all those books into the river." Dayanand asked the guru the reason for this order, and the guru replied, "That which I want to give you cannot be got through books." They were holy books, but he threw them into the river. It is a very good example of guru bhakti. If it be considered a sin committed against the holy scriptures, yet he did not commit a greater sin, that of disobedience to his guru. I read once that sometimes when Dayanand could not understand the true import of the written words, his guru would beat him with a stick. On such occasions, Dayanand would say, "Maharaji, I am a great trouble to you." What very fine guru bhakti he had. Guru bhakti is a matter of love, when heart speaks to heart. When you go to a realized soul to get right understanding, go with all humility. Put aside your views. What you know, while you are with him, try to understand what he is saying. Consider the level he is speaking from, and then compare your own knowledge. Many would go to him for pride of their own knowledge. The man of prominent worldly position will not go, for he is intoxicated with his own power, and a rich man will not go, for he is lost in the pride of wealth. Remember, the God-realized person cannot be bought with money, impressed by power, or pushed by force. When you go to him, put aside your own ideas. After all, no one can rob you of them. We make the mistake of measuring what he is trying to say with what we already know. We have heard that before, so and so said that, etc. Brothers, he will say all this and more, for he must speak on man's level for further comprehension, and will quote many truths that others have said, that the seeker may find his way more easily. But the fact remains, if the seeker wants to receive, he must still his intellect for a while and sit in all humility. If the cup is placed below a pitcher, it will be filled. But if it is placed above the pitcher, how can it be filled? That is why it is said, when the mind is sold to the guru, such a disciple's work is crowned with success. When Ashtavara gave the knowledge to King Janak, do you know what he asked for? He asked the king for his body, his wealth, and mind. Body and wealth are sustained by the mind, so wherever the mind goes, everything goes. Guru Nanak is telling us that if one gives the mind to the guru, one gets the permanent love. Swamiji Maharaj says, O knowledge, you are very ignorant. You knew not the value of a master. Masters are a surging ocean of love. Love for the Lord and love for humanity. But man would test them with his intellect. An impossibility, for they are full of the nectar of love. In their company, true hankering for thee bursts forth to have an overflowing cup of love for God and humanity. Put aside your intellect and become receptive, and then you will see. Once in Berlin, Germany, during my talk, which was being interpreted from English to German by an interpreter, the audience told the interpreter to stop, as the interpretation was not necessary. We understand more from his eyes. Eyes are the windows of the soul, through which the intoxication and the import thereof is conveyed. Giving up mind does not mean one loses one's reason or intellect. It means, first of all, to still the mind completely and fully grasp what the guru is saying. If you put aside the I-hood, you will get the right import, thereby becoming receptive to absorb the perpetual radiation of power from the guru. Kabir Sahib has warned us what can happen. Mind is given elsewhere. Body is in the master's company. Kabir says, how can you dye an unbleached cloth? Swamiji says, do satsang by being receptive, someone. It does not matter if you do not understand the words. If you can be receptive for his radiance will give you some intoxication, that precious jewel of understanding which you gain when you meet the Sadguru is priceless, invaluable, but it is not received at the level of the mind. The mind must be stilled for a while, and then you will get such love, love like a surging ocean. It will surge within you. Your whole being will be uplifted by this overflowing love. After this, your mind can be stilled at will. O Lord, how can we leave the company of such a saint? By seeing whom the mind gets stilled. You can say it is a judging criterion for a master for you cannot get this gift in the company of intellectuals. The waves of truth are ever flowing through the Sadguru, and those waves affect the sincere seeker. Even though the disciple is thousands of miles away, the same effect can be received by directing the attention. If the radio can pick up transmissions from thousands of miles, why cannot our surat become affected? Swami Vivekananda was said at one time to have been an atheist. He would challenge people saying, "Is there anyone who has seen God?" He finally found Sri Ramakrishna, who in those days lived in Calcutta and who was a realized soul, although he was not learned academically. Learning is the mother of books, and knowledge is the mother of all. Ramakrishna had knowledge. If he had no special book learning, did that matter? Swami Vivekananda put the question to him, "Master, have you seen God?" And Ramakrishna replied, "Yes, my child, I have seen him as I see you, more vividly than that." I will now conclude this reading to be finished this little booklet. Next time I would be reading for the satsang. And in benediction, we send our love to our Lord and Master and thank Him for every big and little thing He does for us.
Thank you, Tanya, for reading for us. We had 70 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phones. If there's anyone who's just calling in for the satsang, the reason that the satsang started seemingly an hour earlier this morning is we have gone back to daylight savings time, and we all set our clocks ahead 1 hour this morning. But thank you anyway. We'll catch you next week. Hello.